Hi there, everyone, and welcome back to It's 21, where me, Rob,
me, Andy,
and me, Lizzie,
all look back at every single UK number one of the 21st century, from January 2000 right through to the present day. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us over on Twitter. We are at Hits21UK, that is at Hits21UK. And you can email us too. Send it on over to Hits21podcast@gmail.com. Today, we were brought in by a bit of music that you won't have heard before, or you may not have heard before, and that's because it's Andy's music. Hey, how about that? We talk about music shucks. And we make it too. So, Andy, before we get going, why don't you tell the listeners all about this project that you've bestowed upon the world?
Well, if you insist, then okay. But yeah. So I've released an album called Headspace by myself, Andy Austin. And basically, it is a collection of stuff that I put together from a load of synths and a load of stuff, a load of production setup that my husband got me for Christmas a couple of years ago. I've got an old Casio from the 80s, I've got some more modern synths, and I've got some nice little gear to go with it. And I have just created a whole bunch of sort of ambient, electronic, kind of video game style music that's all on the theme of kind of travel and seeing places and the headspace that puts you in. So it's available on SoundCloud and on Bandcamp. It's going to eventually be on the more mainstream streaming services. But if you fancy it, yeah, Headspace, Andy Austin. Give us a listen and I'll love you for it. Or don't, and I'll love you anyway, because I'm nice.
We'll leave a link to that in the description. And also, I have also been releasing music recently, and I forgot to mention it on the previous episode. So I work under Colourful Sevens, as opposed to my actual name. I will make sure that my new song plays us out. I will put it at the end of the episode, and then I'll leave a link to the description. It's the first track of an album I'm working on, and have been working on in fits and starts for about 2 or 3 years. Hopefully I'll get it sorted soon. So, you can check both of those out if you like. Before we begin this week, just want to pay a little tribute to Neil Kulkarni. Those of you who listen to us and also listen to the wonderful chart music podcast that he was part of, you will know that he really tragically died early this week, Neil Kulkarni, January 22nd, and he was just 51 years old. Neil had written for all sorts of publications down the years, including Melody Maker, The NME, The Guardian, loads of other places. He was also a published author, a lover of pop, in particular The Specials. I've been listening to them a lot this week because of him. And he was also a father. He really was one of life's good guys. A person I never met or spoke to, but knew very well because of how personally and eloquently he spoke about his life and the people in it. Whenever he was on chart music or writing a book or an article, he made sure that the words that he was putting down were exactly what was in his heart. I will leave a link to Simon Price's tribute to him in the description as well, if you want to read the words of someone who knew him very well and met him and loved him too. And I will leave a link to chart music as well. I'm sure there's lots of people who listen to us who also listen to chart music. But I have loved Neil's work for a long time. And now one of the reasons I actually got into chart music was because he was on it. I remember his name being mentioned and as one of the panelists. And I thought, oh, I'll check that out, because I'd read his Periodic Table of Hip Hop book about 9 to 10 years ago now. And the FUNK blog that he used to keep as well, and throughout the years all the clippings and things like that that have been posted about his work in Melody Maker and The NME down the years. But Lizzie, I think you listened to chart music before me. I think you got me into it actually all those years ago, so I don't know if you wanted to say anything about Neil.
Yeah, I stumbled on it kind of by accident on a forum I used to go on, and I fell in love with it instantly, just because, like you say, Neil was a big part of it. You felt like you really knew him because of like how open and honest and just warm he was, and how much you could tell he loved pop music, but he could be very passionate about when he didn't like certain pop music. he's very honest, and yeah, his writing is fantastic. I would urge you to go and check it out if you haven't already. There's plenty of links out there. There's the tributes that people have written. There's snippets that people have picked up, both from his writing and from chart music. And even the words himself that I've kind of took with me this week. To quote Neil Kulkarni, "Pop is, I reiterate, a way of listening. The only way of listening I ever learned or cared for. It means giving everything a chance, but letting nothing off the hook. The only way of listening I ever wanted to express." I think that is really beautifully put. And yeah, he always said to his daughter, I think it was, "Keep a little Mark Bolan in your heart." I'd say, keep a little Neil Kulkarni in your heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been thinking about that exact line a lot this week. The give everything a chance and let nothing off the hook. That is, and then you apply it to all of his work and everything that he did and said. And yeah. Wow, I genuinely not to go into it too much because, you know, but I remember waking up in that, like, and seeing the news and just sort of thinking, like, and something hasn't come back, I'll be honest. Something went in that moment that hasn't quite come back, and I'm not quite sure what it is. But, yeah,
it hit me all at once that I'd never hear him on the podcast again, and
yeah,
it's horrible.
Yeah. We will leave a link. We will leave a link to a GoFundMe that has been set up for Neil's family as well. His two daughters and his partner that Neil is really unfortunately left behind. That was set up by David Stubbs, who's another chart music alum and another wonderful music writer as well. But yeah, thank you for listening to us talk about Neil for a second. If you want to get a taste and a flavour of what he was like, by all means, go ahead and listen to chart music. There's a link in the description for you. Always entertaining was Neil, always.
I said on Twitter this week that I don't think I'd be doing this podcast if not for chart music. And I stand by that.
No, and I also agree that the structure of this podcast was heavily, heavily influenced by the hours of lockdown that I spent listening to chart music. They're a really wonderful bunch of people, and they're going to miss Neil a lot. So, but thank you for joining us for this episode. We are at the end of 2006. We are going to be covering the race for Christmas number one in 2006. We're just going to look back to last week. No such problems with the poll this time. About it being a close run thing. There were a few votes for Smack That, but Patience by Take That was a pretty clear winner. But there were some votes for Smack That. I would like to hear from those people. If you have any defense to offer up, I would really love to hear it. Even if it's just over Twitter or email. So, it is time to press on with this week's episode. And as always, it's time for some news headlines from around the time the songs we're covering in this week's episode were at number one in the UK. It's just the one song. It's a short period of time. It's just me reading the news this week. And then we'll get on to the usual Christmas episode good stuff as fast as we can. Legendary funk and soul singer James Brown dies on Christmas Day, aged 73. Meanwhile, former United States President Gerald Ford dies on Boxing Day, aged 93. Shane Warne announces his retirement from international cricket after 15 years of playing for Australia. And in Glasgow and Edinburgh, public New Year's Eve celebrations for Hogmanay are called off due to bad weather. Lizzie, we're going to come to you. You're going to give us the year-end review for 2006 for the United States.
I am. So, as promised, I'm going to give you the year-end top 10 singles and the best-performing album of 2006 in the US.
Ooh.
So, first up, the best-performing album of 2006 is one that I don't think you would ever get, Some Hearts by Carrie Underwood.
Okay.
What?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, American Idol winner. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was her debut album, and it was certified 9 times platinum in the US. But... Oh, wow. Unusually, the album only reached number 2 on the album's chart itself. It was held off the top spot by Confessions on the Dance Floor by Madonna, which ended up at number 22 on the year-end list.
God, the charts are so curious.
Very much so. Even more curious, Some Hearts also failed to chart in the main UK charts, but it got to number one on our country albums chart.
Ah, okay.
Bad luck. So, over to top 10 singles in the US for 2006. So at number 10, we have Check On It by Beyoncé featuring Slim Thug.
Okay, yep.
At number 9, one we covered, Sexy Back by Justin Timberlake featuring Timbaland.
Ah, see, that might have been my guess at number 1. So I would have just embarrassed myself. Yeah.
I would have guessed at that too, honestly. In at number 8 is Riding by Chameleon Air featuring Crazy Bone.
That's a shame.
I'm gutted we didn't get to cover that one.
Yeah.
At number 7, another one we did cover, Crazy by Gnarled Barkley. In at number 6 is one that is currently in the top 20 in 2024. It's Unwritten by Natasha Bedingfield.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
As we speak, yep, it is currently just occupying, just inside the top 20.
Saw her do it at Pride last year.
Oh, which one?
At Manchester Pride. Saw her do Unwritten.
Oh, wow. And nice.
And These Words, obviously. But yeah, the crowd went wild for Unwritten at Pride. It was great, yeah.
In at number 5, another one we covered, Hips Don't Lie by Shakira featuring Wyclef Jean.
Ah, see, that would have maybe been mine, I think.
That was a big single.
Yeah, I think that might have been my suggestion. So, ooh, yeah, okay, I'm a bit stumped now.
In at number 4, one we covered in 2005, You're Beautiful by James Blunt.
Okay. My triangle.
In at number 3 is Promiscuous by Nelly Furtado featuring Timbaland.
Ooh,
high. Blimey, wow.
This was a big Nelly Furtado year.
Yeah, that was the first single released in America off Loose, wasn't it? We had Maneater they had Promiscuous. Yeah.
At number 2 is Temperature by Sean Paul. So in at number 1, Andy, I think you'll like this. It's Bad Day by Daniel Powter.
Oh my God. No way.
That is shocking. I mean, I do like it. And I rated it highly in Born to Runner Up because one of us had to. But I'm not sure I would have put it as the bestseller of the year. I'm not sure it's worthy of that. Wow, yeah. Daniel. Wow.
Big year for coffee pop in America.
Well, thank you very much, Lizzie. It's time to come back over to this side of the Atlantic and see what were on that there telly on Christmas Eve, Christmas Day and Boxing Day over Christmas 2006. Andy?
Yes. Hello, hello. It's TV time. It is Christmas 2006. Do not adjust your sets because those sets have some decent programmes on this year, actually, and some not so decent ones as well. See what you make of it. So, on the BBC, the big day, it rolls out a lot of big hitters. There's a bit of a kind of assault with comedy this year. At the centre of the evening is Doctor Who Christmas special, The Runaway Bride, introducing one Catherine Tate as Donna Noble, who was, of course, initially just a kind of comedy one-off, but has become a much beloved character in Doctor Who. And we also have the return of the Vicar of Dibley for its final episodes, airing on Christmas Day and New Year's Day, in which Geraldine marries Richard Armitage, I think, if I remember that rightly. And we also get Little Britain Abroad, which is exactly what you imagined it is, which features guest appearances from Steve Coogan and Ronnie Corbett, amongst others. So it's very much a comedy Christmas from BBC One. They really want you to laugh. It's heavily counterbalanced by what EastEnders has in store for us this year. I'll come back to that in a minute. Just keep that in your head. And it has to be said that not all of the Beeb's offerings are worthwhile Christmas gifts, because on Christmas Eve we have the excruciating Duet Impossible, in which, and I quote, "Modern technology gives pop stars the chance to sing duets with their idols from yesteryear, presented by Vernon Kay."
No!
So, Duet Impossible treats us to such delights as Westlife duetting with Roy Orbison. I know. Sugar Babes having a tete-a-tete with Dusty Springfield. And, and a future UK number one. For real. Stay tuned in 2007 to see which one that is. But Duet Impossible gives us a UK number one single, unbelievably. Yes.
Stay tuned. God.
Have you remembered what that is? Yeah. But yes, mixed bag from BBC, but mostly keeping it polite, keeping it fun. Remember that. Over on ITV, we've got 2 hours of Doc Martin.
Right.
And on Christmas Eve, we also have Philip Schofield's Night Before Christmas, so let's say no more about that one. But yes, ITV did not have a vintage year. Over to the soaps. So I've been hinting at this, obviously, and I said that the BBC was full of fun and comedy this year. And I've underlined this point because bloody hell. On EastEnders, original character and Albert Square matriarch Pauline Fowler, played by Wendy Richard, is killed off. And she's not just killed off. In this episode on Christmas Day, Pauline is disowned by her young son, smacked around the face by her daughter-in-law. Off screen, she's beaten with a frying pan by her husband. Then Pauline collapses in the snow and dies alone. Merry Christmas, everyone!
Oh my God.
I know. Christmas Day, everyone. Meanwhile, on Corrie, David Platt is in his Demon David era, I remember that very well, and he reveals a secret family affair over Christmas dinner, just for the lols, and the Grimshaws have a newborn baby dropped on their doorstep on Christmas Day. Symbolism. And it's a massive one on Emmerdale, where head of the family Tom King is murdered. He's pushed out of a window. It will later be revealed that his son Carl was the killer. Big Christmas film showdown this year. So, what do you think? The BBC had Monsters, Inc. and ITV had Philosopher's Stone. What's the winner, do we think, everyone?
Probably Ooh. Philosopher's Stone.
I'd say Monsters, Inc.
Actually, yeah, because it's just BBC. It's just default, isn't it? People just leave it on the BBC.
Oh, no, I didn't mean ratings. What do we think is better? I think Monsters, Inc.
Oh, Monsters, Inc.
Yeah, Monsters,
Inc. Oh, yeah, Monsters, Inc., definitely. Yeah. Yes. God, yeah.
Okay,
sorry,
I thought you meant
which one would more people watch. God, yeah.
No, oh, it would have been the BBC. Yeah. Definitely would have been the BBC, but yeah. Also, Queen Elizabeth II used her speech to talk about how different generations could come together to build a sense of community. And perhaps to underline the generational gap point, this was the first Queen's Christmas message made available as a podcast. How do you do, fellow subjects? Yes. Oh. The Queen also, she pointedly encouraged viewers to build bridges with British Muslims in her speech. And that was also the message of the alternative Christmas message on Channel 4, which was given by Khadija, a veiled British Muslim, who spoke about her relationship with both Islam and Britain, including her great-grandmother's work as a suffragette. A very nice message, that one. And that's your TV Christmas. So we've got Catherine Tate, inclusive speeches, time-travelling duets, and an old woman being beaten to death. Perfect. Pass the mulled wine.
Thank you very much, Andy. So it is time now to have a little look at the toys and video games that we were buying around Christmas 2006 and throughout the year, actually, in 2006. So, Lizzie, what have you got for us?
Yeah, so as always, with thanks to the Toy Retailers Association of the UK for these figures. So let's just go down the awards as usual. First up is the creative toy of the year, Paper FX.
Okay.
What's that? Don't know what that is. Okay.
As we get older, we're not going to remember any of these. I'll just warn you. The film toy range of the year, I do remember this, Cars.
Oh, they
yeah,
were
okay,
everywhere.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
They were everywhere. And I do remember this, actually, as well. The innovative toy of the year is Butterscotch Pony. The craze of the year of 2006 is shootout cards. Was that ever your thing, Rob?
I collected the Panini stickers.
Yeah.
But that's about all.
The electronic toy of the year is the Pixel Chicks Mall. The doll of the year for 2006 is Bratz Forever Diamonds with a Z.
Bratz has got that sewn up, hasn't it?
Yeah,
Bratz is like, you know how
Ant
and Dec win the television awards every year? It's like that, isn't it?
God.
Yeah, pretty much. The game of the year for 2006 is the Deal or No Deal board game.
Okay, yeah, it shows how popular that was, yeah.
I am, this Christmas, I remember it was this Christmas, I bought my mum the DVD game of Deal or No Deal. She was absolutely mad on it. Would you believe that my mum changed her hours at work to make it home for Deal or No Deal every day? That's
really?
How big it was at this
I
time.
I sort of can, yeah, because it was a really, really huge deal. Yeah, I can sort
I know,
of,
crazy.
Yeah.
So then we have the boys' toy of the year, which I'm not going to reveal because it does actually relate to the toy of the year.
Okay.
So I'll skip to the girls' toy of the year, which was Nintendogs Trick Trainer Pups.
Oh, Nintendogs.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, Nintendogs.
Okay, then. So, boys' toy of the year and toy of the year, then, I guess, are the two that are left.
I'll have you know that the toy of the year for 2006 is the Doctor Who Cyberman mask.
Delete. I don't remember that at all.
Delete.
Yeah, didn't it have like a voice changer in it?
I assume so, yeah. I mean, I knew everybody had the sonic screwdriver, but I don't remember the voice changer mask for the Cybermen. Wow.
Yeah, so the boys' toy of the year was Doctor Who figures, so same thing, kind of.
Yeah, good old Cybermen. See, there's a lot of stuff on TV at the moment that's really filtering through to kids' toys. You got and just toys in general, Deal or No Deal, Doctor Who. Do you have the video games on file there, Lizzie?
Yes, I do. So thank you as ever to UKIEpedia. I don't think that's the right pronunciation, but we have the UK top selling games for 2006. Shout out to number 17. Norton Internet Security 2007, banger of a game. Had many, many fun hours playing that. Good times. So it goes without saying at this point that the top two is FIFA 07 at number one and Pro Evolution Soccer 6 at number two.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. So the question, as ever, what do you think is the highest entry that isn't a football game?
Oh.
Once again, I'm tempted to say the Wii. I know it came out in December. However, I think Wii Sports, that's the highest selling game of all time, isn't it? So it must have made a dent in the charts at least.
True,
but I don't know. Yeah.
I would say for most people that came bundled with the system.
Mm. Oh, would that not count then? Would that not register as a sale if it came with the system?
I don't think it's not in the list for 2006. I'm not saying for 2007. I'll keep that under wraps, but
what about Mario Kart DS? Everyone had that at this time. Or Star Wars Battlefront 2. Can't remember if you covered that last year. Star Wars Battlefront 2. I'll put that on there as well.
Can't remember if it's a little later than this, but the Elder Scrolls one, Oblivion. Was it Oblivion at this time?
It was Oblivion.
With Oblivion before Skyrim. The only other thing I could possibly think of is that if there's any Zelda or Final Fantasy games, or is there another Burnout game out at the time? That those are the only ones. I've got no solid picks though, so let's see.
I think Burnout's been and gone by this point.
Mm.
Still fairly popular, but there's not been a new one.
Okay.
So in terms of your guesses, Oblivion is at number 30.
Oh.
Ooh.
Star Wars Battlefront 2 is at number 37. I'm pretty sure that was in last year's. And Mario Kart DS is in at number 58.
Oh, Jesus.
God, fingers on the pulse here. Jesus.
Yeah. So, without further ado, the top 10. So in at number 10 is WWE SmackDown vs. Raw 2007. Number 9, one I played a lot, The Sims 2. At number 8, we have Tomb Raider Legend. At number 7, a reappearance for Cars. In at number 6 is The Sims 2 Pets. At number 5 is Lego Star Wars 2, the original trilogy.
Star Wars game.
Yeah, good games.
In at number 4 is Grand Theft Auto Liberty City Stories.
Is that a little spin-off one for the DS or something?
It came out on the PSP. Imagine GTA on the DS, that would be sick. And in at number 3, which is the highest rated non-football game for 2006, is Need for Speed Carbon.
It's always cars, isn't it?
Yeah, if it's not football, it's cars in the mid-2000s, in some form or another. And, as I've mentioned, top two, Pro Evo Soccer 6 and FIFA 07.
Well, I owned both of those, so yay. Right then, thank you very much, Lizzie. We will get back to the music now. And back to Andy, because it's time for my favourite kind of new segment of recent Christmas episodes, which is this Born to Runner Up thing that we have come up with. It's such a great idea. So, Andy, Born to Runner Up, time for the 2006 rundown. So, take it away.
Yeah, so Born to Runner Up, just to quickly recap for anyone who's new to this. So, every song that got to number two and peaked at number two, I should say, in 2006. We look at all of them each year and give a little consolation trophy to whichever song that missed out on number one most deserves recognition from that year. Born to Runner-Up, which we've lovingly started abbreviating Be True, which I really want to make happen. I think that's a lovely abbreviation. Yeah. But anyway, yes, so there were 20 songs this year. I'll give you the top 10. So we all had different picks for this. Like, we all were really different, all three of us. And I think a consensus pick has made it to the top here. I think you might be quite surprised at what the winner is on this one. So in 10th place, it is From Paris to Berlin by Infernal.
Only pumping to number 10, unfortunately.
In 9th place, it's Riding by Chameleon Air featuring Crazy Bone.
Well, at least it gets played on the podcast.
Yeah, for about a second. In 8th place, it's SOS by Rihanna.
Oh, okay. Ah. So Soft Cell make it into the 21st century then. There you go.
In 7th place, it's Put Your Records On by Corinne Bailey-Ray.
Sweet.
Quite low, that one, isn't it?
Yeah.
That sweet. Was my number one pick.
Yeah, well, maybe someone didn't give it any points. Yeah.
I wonder who. Yeah.
In 6th place, it's Ain't No Other Man by Christina Aguilera. Can I please ask for the edit that the clip that we play is, Hey! Okay, so it's our top five in Born to Runner-Up. Our 5th place pick is Every Time We Touch by Cascada.
Yes. Yeah, I'm glad that's in the top five.
Love that one. In 4th place, it's Yeah Yeah by Body Box featuring Luciana.
Oh,
And these top three, quite a good top three this. So in 3rd place, it's Boogie Tonight by Booty Love.
Tune.
God. Some proper dance classics going in so far.
In 2nd place, it's My Love by Justin Timberlake.
Oh!
Oh, wow!
I expected that to be number one. Okay.
So did I.
Told you, consensus pick. This year's Born to Runner-Up winner, it's When You Were Young by The Killers.
Okay.
What?
Right.
Quite a surprising pick, this one,
so,
isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, I like that a lot. That would have been, like, 4th on my list, maybe, or 3rd. But, okay. Yeah. It's a bit like the Alfie same principle, this. Where everybody gets what nobody wants, sort of thing.
Yeah. We all gave tens to a different song. Ten, being our highest score. We all gave that to a different song.
Yeah.
And so we've ended up with a consensus pick. Keep this in mind for the end of the show. Jaws may drop yet further than this, but well done, The Killers, with When You Were Young. You get this year's Born to Runner-Up trophy.
Well, well done to them. So we are going to pivot back towards Christmas now, and we're going to get on to... going to play some more clips of more songs. The top 10 on Christmas Day in 2006. And then we're going to look at the Christmas number one. But we'll run down from 10 to 2. So here we are. At 10, it is down 3 places. From number 7, it's the official Bond song for a new era, Chris Cornell, You Know My Name. At 9, it's a former number 1, also down 3 places, Smack That by Akon and Eminem. Down 3 from 5, at number 8, it's Boogie Tonight by Booty Love, we just heard about it. Last week's number 2, this week's number 7, it's Cliff Richard wishing us a very 21st century Christmas. At 6, it's up 4 places, it's a Christmas classic back in the chart, it's The Pogues and Kirsty MacColl with Fairy Tale of New York. At 5, down 1 place from 4, we've just heard about them but not this song, it's Cascada and their rendition of Savage Garden, Truly, Madly, Deeply. This week's number 4, it's jumped up 46 places, but it's not enough for number 1, Girls Aloud, I Think We're Alone Now. At 3, into the top 3, it might have risen 95 places, but it's not good enough for the Christmas number 1, it's McFly, and Sorry's not good enough. And last week's number 1, finally knocked off the top, this week at number 2, after 4 weeks at the summit, it is Take That's Big Comeback, Patience. Which means that the official Christmas number 1 for 2006 is this.
What if I told you it was all meant to be? Would you believe me? Would you agree? It's almost that feeling that we've met before. So tell me that you don't think I'm crazy when I tell you love has come here and now. A moment like this, some people wait a lifetime. For a moment like this, some people search forever for that one special kiss. Oh, I can't believe it's happening to me. Some people wait a lifetime for a moment. Everything changes, but beauty remains. Something so tender, I can't explain. Well, I may be dreaming, but still I go awake. Can we make this dream last forever? And I'll cherish all.
Okay, this is A Moment Like This by Leona Lewis. Released as the lead single from her eventual debut studio album titled Spirit, A Moment Like This is Leona Lewis's first single to be released in the UK and her first to reach number one, and it's not the last time that we'll be coming to Leona on this podcast. The single is a cover of the song originally performed by Kelly Clarkson, which did not reach the singles chart in the UK, but did reach number 56 on the downloads chart. A Moment Like This went straight in at number 1 as a brand new entry, knocking Take That off the top of the charts. It stayed at number 1 for 4 weeks. In its first week atop the charts, which is when it became Christmas number 1, it sold 571,000 copies, beating competition from the songs that you just heard about. In week two, it sold 109,000 copies, beating competition from Different World by Iron Maiden, which got to number 3. In week three, it sold 39,000 copies, beating competition from Proper Education by Eric Prydz and Pink Floyd, which climbed to number 2, and Window in the Skies by U2, which got to number 4. And in week 4, it's last week at number 1, and we're now into January 2007, it sold 21,000 copies, beating competition from Grace Kelly by Mika, which got to number 3, and Stars in Their Eyes by Just Jack, which got to number 4. Oh my God, we're in my era now. When it was knocked off the top of the charts, A Moment Like This fell 5 places to number 6. By the time it was done on the charts, it had been inside the top 100 for 19 weeks. The song is currently officially certified platinum in the UK as of 2023. So, Lizzie, Leona, I can't think of another L. Go.
My problem with this song has nothing to do with Leona Lewis, who I think is by far the best solo winner of the X Factor.
Agreed.
And we'll probably say top 2 alongside Little Mix. I have a slight preference for Little Mix, but she's up there. She's easily the best thing about this song, as she has all the power of a Whitney Houston or a Mariah Carey without sounding like a cheap imitation. The problem is, I do think that this particular song is a cheap imitation of a Whitney Houston song, and it doesn't do a very good job of hiding it. The title is almost identical to one of her biggest hits, and the lyrics even reference one of her other biggest hits, like Could This Be the Greatest Love of All? It has the unfortunate side effect of coming off like a song that was written for Whitney Houston but turned down, and for launching a brand new artist onto the scene after all this hype and all the show and everything like that, I don't think that's good enough. I feel like that's a bit of a slight. And I think ultimately it's a relief that both Kelly Clarkson and Leona Lewis went on to record much better singles that were more suited to their individual styles, because this sort of winner song can easily become a definitive full stop on the career of a singing contest winner. Challenging the likes of Whitney Houston and Mariah Carey is, for most singers, a recipe for failure. Leona Lewis and Kelly Clarkson just about managed to overcome the odds, but others aren't so lucky, and more on that next Christmas, I suppose. I think Leona's performance here is very good, but I think the song itself is quite bland and tepid, and I'm not a fan of the song. I'm sorry.
Ooh, all right then. Andy, how about you?
I'm really interested in that point there about Kelly Clarkson being the choice of cover, because it's really interesting that I forgot that this was a Kelly Clarkson cover until earlier today. And I was trying to think, like, who is the point of comparison, who they might try and base Leona off, who they might use as a template to launch her. And I thought, well, her voice, I'm trying to think of people who've got a similar range. And yeah, Kelly Clarkson. I can see why they went with her. And she's one of the very, very few successful, long-term successful winners of American Idol. And here we have Leona, who is one of the very few relatively long-term successful winners of The X Factor as well, which kind of makes you think it's not rocket science, really. But there is a bit of a cynical thing with this, that The X Factor has this thing. Are you aware of the phenomenon of the chosen one on each series of The X Factor? That there is a fairly obvious producer's pick who is being shilled to the audience as the person you should vote for.
Oh, yeah.
And in most years, the chosen one doesn't win. Like, Daniel Johnson was one, Cher Lloyd was one, Diana Vickers was one. And in most cases, they don't win because the audience eventually gets wise to it. But Leona was definitely this year's chosen one, and she did win, partly because she was by far, and I mean by far, the best singer on this year's competition. It was quite a weak year for the X Factor in terms of vocal ability. But partly because, as well, I think they did have a little bit of a ready-made career lined up. I think they wanted a big-voiced solo female to win this series, because a lot of the songs that ended up on Spirit are already sat around having been flogged to other artists, which, again, you mentioned, Lizzie, that, like, kind of sounds like, you know, Leona is singing songs that have been passed over and given to her. And she will eventually end up doing that. Bleed in Love already exists at this moment, and it's been offered to a few people who've refused it. And I do think there is a sense of the corporate machine wearing here that we think, right, we've got some good songs hanging around that we kind of need a solo female singer for. Let's push her as the winner of this series. I'm not saying that's what happened, but it would make sense, and it would kind of jive with the way that Simon Cowell does business. So, as with everything X Factor, there is a veneer of corporate shilling that is inescapable about this completely. I mean, of course it is. It's X Factor. But I don't hold any of that against the owner at all. And I think one big compliment you can pay to her is that I do think she, in a weird way, kind of saved the X Factor and sort of made it into the phenomenon that it is, because...
Yeah, I agree.
It's easy to look back at hindsight now that, like, you know, it was this huge TV phenomenon, but it wasn't at this point. Like, it had a pretty successful first couple of series, but Steve Brookstone had vanished without trace. Shane Ward was doing okay, but he'd not yet had another number one single after That's My Goal, and he never really... did anything much after 2006. And then in series three, there was no one else really. I mean, Ray Quinn was likable. He made the final, but I definitely don't think he would have had a singing career out of this. It's just Leona, really. And I think if we'd gone three series, bear in mind as well, the next series after this doesn't produce any stars. If we'd gone those first three, four series without anyone really making it and really becoming a big star and really demonstrating a special level of vocal ability, then I think people would have started to realise that The Emperor Has No Clothes and that this show is not producing big stars. Because out of those first four series, Leona is the only really big star that comes out of there. But she is one of the very biggest that The X Factor ever produces. I mean, it's easy to forget because she's kind of sort of finished now, but she... My word, she was big at the time. She sang the end credits theme for Avatar. Like, she was just...
Yeah.
Absolutely, I know no one remembers that song, but that was a big gig to get. She was really colossally huge at the time. And she deserves it to some extent because she is by far the best singer that the X Factor has had to this point, and I don't hold anything against her at all. The problem I've always had with Leona is that I think she's a perfect example of everything about the X Factor, in that, first of all, this song is both the best and the worst example of the X Factor winner's song because it's the most typical X Factor winner's song. So it's like, it feels the most generic, the most cliche ridden, the most by the numbers, but it's kind of one of the best because Leona does such a good job of singing it, and it's all kind of diminishing returns from this point on. But for Leona, I think she's a really good example of how the X Factor finds singers and gives them a platform, but it does not produce artists. And there is a big, big gap between the two that, you know, you find someone who's come from absolutely nowhere, they've got a nice voice, you give them some songs, they get number one. Great. But then there's no story for them. There's no space for them to occupy. And it tends to be, for whatever the reason, I won't get into this now, but for whatever the reason, the people who actually do have potential to be made into artists tend to not win. They tend to be runners-up. People like Ollie Mears and JLS and One Direction, who like made very successful careers like with big branding behind them and stuff. But the winners tend to not get that treatment. They just kind of get given a song and get put out there. And my problem with Leona has always been that she's just a very good singer. And there's nothing wrong with that. She's a lovely singer, but she has... I just don't think there's any kind of interest there at all. Couldn't describe what Leona's brand is other than ballads. And I do find her music pretty boring to listen to be honest. And I'll come back to this in 2007 for sure. And this is kind of, yeah, this is that. In that she sings it technically very, very well. She does that ridiculously silly high note at the end, but she nails it. Mm-hmm. And this is just fine. It's just fine. And that's all I really ever think about Leona's music, to be honest. So, yeah, she is a good example of what it's like to be on the X Factor and to win it and to come out of it, in that they were very lucky to get someone with such a great singing voice, and she got deserved success of the platform that was given to her, but she didn't really get the proper treatment that a pop star should get, and she could have been so much more than she was, I think, to be honest. But thank God for Leona, because I don't believe we would have had a Series 5, 6, 7 of X Factor if they hadn't found someone at this stage. So this song is meh. It's very generic, very, very winner song material, but at least we've got a proper star out of X Factor to talk about. So, yeah, I'm middling on this, yeah.
God, can you imagine if Ray Quinn would have won? Like, God bless him. He seems like a perfectly nice guy, good singer, but it would have been like the non-threatening boys competition. Like, there's no reason for it to exist because it's obvious what the outcome's going to be. Like, Sonic, throw in Eog and Quig in 2008. Like, why not?
Yeah.
The thing with this, I suppose, is that we've covered so many winner songs now that it's going to be hard to find anything new to say about the songs themselves at this point. You know, they all, because they all basically follow the same formula, don't they, where they all start off slow and vulnerable and quiet, and then they increase in size a little bit, then they get as big as they can, and they give the singer as good an excuse as possible to belt out, like, you know, whatever it is they're saying. It's a very tried and tested method that was sort of perfected by every Oscar winner for Best Original Song at some point between sort of like 1983 and 1992. And like, I'm just bored of it now, but we still have a fair few to go. And like, we're only 2 years away from Geraldine McQueen's My Winner Song, which directly, I think, parodies this. I think this was the song they had in mind.
Definitely
this that they had in mind. But what I will say is that because these songs follow such a specific formula, that you can kind of just let them drift past you. You know, I now like to view them as little more. We've kind of discussed this here, actually. They're little more than just vehicles for the person singing them, which means that you can compare your Will Youngs to your Steve Brooksteins and Michelle's to Shane's, etc. And I think Leona, just in terms of pure ability, I completely agree with the two of you. She is the most accomplished winner's singer we have had so far. Like, I'm not keen on a moment like this. It feels like we're stuck in the Bodyguard soundtrack somewhere. Like, we're in Whitney's early 90s phase.
And definitely.
It sort of feels a bit like Eurovision, actually, in the sense that, like, the X Factor, whatever the X Factor is doing, is about 15 years behind the rest of the pop market. But what it does have comes from Leona. She follows all the numerous key changes throughout and feels like she's in control. It doesn't feel like the song is leading her. It feels like she's very much in tune, very much in step with everything that's happening around her. And I think that the best version of this song, of the numerous versions of it that have been recorded now, is that the best version is the live performance that Leona does just before she's crowned the winner. The one afterwards, she's a bit too emotional, and obviously she's very overwhelmed, and it's a big moment, and you can forgive a couple of missteps here and there. But it does feel like the moment that she does it, before she wins, feels like a bit of a crowning moment in that particular series of The X Factor. Like you were saying, she was the chosen one that season. And whatever happens afterwards is, you know, it's kind of one for the birds. We can discuss it. I mean, we come back to her a couple more times on this show. So, you know, she made a better go of it than most of the other singers that came out of The X Factor. But all of the questions that you could have about what happened to Leona afterwards, when it's just about the end of The X Factor in 2006, I think they find the balance just about where it's the end of the show, but the beginning of the winner's career. You know, they've always kind of struggled with that kind of, we're leaving one thing behind and moving into another era. I think they've always kind of struggled with that, about trying to find the balance. And I think this just about gets there. Probably helps that this has already been a winner's song like 2 or 3 years before. But I feel like they just about avoid mixing up the themes of this and the formula. I feel like they kind of sorted it out for Leona to take advantage. Because like you were saying, The X Factor was a big deal in 2004 and 2005, but by 2006 it felt like it was on the bit of a crest of a wave, and it just needed, you know, it's like a mutually beneficial thing with Leona, where it was like, Leona definitely benefited from being on The X Factor, of course, but The X Factor benefited from having Leona win the competition. Mm. Like you were saying, if it was Lovely Ray Quinn, it may not have had the same, because then after 3 years you get, well, why are no women winning it? And why is it just, like you say, non-threatening boys winning it? Where are they 18 months later? Why are they? And so then all these questions come in, whereas with Leona, it's like, oh, bona fide star, you know, straight away. And it's like, we've got somebody else winning it, bit different. You know, she's a different kind of actor, usual winners. She's very good. Everybody likes her, etc., etc. There's no doubt on the night, actually, about who's going to win, because Leona's league's better than Lovely Ray. the entire thing does feel a bit like a victory lap in a sort of like in a very anticlimactic way. And I think that the thing with a moment like this is that it's just kind of like the cherry on the top, because when they do the performances, it's like Ray's singing his heart out and you're just sort of looking at him going, mate, there is no chance. There is just no chance. Like, and this isn't even said with hindsight. It's like everybody knew. Like, everybody was looking at it and watching it sort of like, as soon as Leona hits that moment, hits that high note at the end of her penultimate performance of the song, before the votes close, you're like, and there you go, she's won it. Like, you know, she was already being pushed forward as the winner, and then she really delivered on the narrative that was being built around her. It's better than the same old guff that we're going to have to deal with over the next few years around Christmas with the X Factor. It's fine, this. I think that it's maybe made slightly more interesting because, like, it doesn't do the key change at the end. It kind of has already done a couple, and so by the time you get another key change, it's like, well, we're already kind of there. And so it's not as uninvited or as uncomfortable. So, yeah, it's fine. I will never, never listen to this again out of choice. I've been looking ahead to it at the end of the year thinking, oh, it's really going to drag the year's average down, this, isn't it? in terms of, like, you know, how I feel about the year. I wish that we had, like, you know, just better selections for Christmas number ones, but this is what the X Factor did to the chart, isn't it? So, Andy, speaking of the average for the year, the bottom five. I think this is the moment that everybody looks forward to, where we find out at the end of the year the five songs that we hated the most and the 10 songs that we loved the most.
they probably look forward to the top 10 more than the bottom five. But yes, so a few in this that are very, very obvious. One or two that might be a bit harsh. Only one, really. And I think our fifth worst song of the year is potentially a bit harsh. On an X Factor theme, it is It's Chico Time by Chico, which we gave an average score of 4.5. I think that's a bit harsh. Our fourth worst song of the year with an average score of 4.2. It's Westlife with The Rose, completing what must surely be pretty much an annual event so far in them appearing in our bottom five. So our bottom three of the year, in third place with an average score of 3.8 and put in the pie hole by me, it is Nasty Girl by the Notorious B.I.G. with All Sorts of Other People. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Biggie below Westlife. Never thought I'd see the day.
Well, even further below that is Eminem, because Smack That by Akon and Eminem is our second worst song of the year. An average score of 3.7, put in the pie hole by myself and Lizzie, but not you, Rob. But there is something that Rob, along with both of us, put in the pie hole, all three of us, this year. With an average score of 1.7, it is our worst song of 2006, and in fact, the lowest score any song has ever received on Hits 21. So not just the worst song of 2006, but our choice for worst number one of the century so far is I Wish I Was a Punk Rocker by Sandy Tom.
Oh, that is broad.
Wow. Yeah.
I have a feeling it may hold on to its title for the worst number one of the noughties, but it is going to have its... I think it will be bumped up a couple of places for worst number one of the century.
Yes, I think there are a few strong...
I would agree.
Yeah. Strong contenders for that dubious crowd coming up in the 2010s.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Oh, Sandy. Ah, well, just smile, Sandy. Andy, so... the top 10 of the year. Let's brighten it up before we send everybody away and then tell them to come back for 2007. So, start us off. What's at number 10? What's at number 10?
I'm going to tell you, it's a really strong top 10 this year. In a really pleasant bit of stats for you, 10 songs were vaulted by at least one of us this year, and it's the top 10. It aligns perfectly. Hey. Isn't that nice?
Nice.
Ah, symmetry. Just lovely. So, our 10th highest rated song of the year with an average score of 7.2, vaulted by Rob, it is Patience by Take That.
Oh, the boys
got it. That's
our
level. I mean, that's number 10. Like, that's a good one for number 10. In 9th place, again vaulted by Rob, but not by me and Lizzie, with an average score of 7.5, it is Maneater by Nelly Furtado.
Okay. Ah. Very strong year.
In eighth place, with an average score of 7.8 and put in the vault by Lizzie, it is Sorry by Madonna. Forgot we even covered that, to be honest. It's been a long year. In seventh place, vaulted by myself and Rob, with an average score of 8.2, it is No Tomorrow by Orson.
Oh, I'm glad they got in.
Yeah.
And in sixth place, vaulted by all three of us, but only making it into sixth place with an average score of 8.8. Again, not even making the top five. 8.8.
What?
It's Smile by Lily Allen.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
God, this is some year. Oh, 2006 is a great year. I think it's a great year. Such a good average. Such a high average.
In fifth place, vaulted by all three of us with an average score of 9, it's When the Sun Goes Down by Arctic Monkeys.
Oh, wow. Right at the back. Yeah. Right back to the start of the year. Oh.
Yeah. In fourth place, vaulted by all three of us with an average score of 9.2, it is Stargirl by McFly.
Oh, I expected that to be a little bit higher. Ooh,
me too.
Interesting.
So, this top three. In third place, with an average score of 9.2, vaulted by myself and Rob, it's Welcome to the Black Parade by My Chemical Romance.
Ah, top three's fine by me. With the competition this year to get into the top three, that's pretty high.
In second place, vaulted by all three of us, with an average score of 9.3, it is I Don't Feel Like Dancing by Scissor Sisters.
Ah, which means...
We please bring on Arctic Monkeys to hand over the trophy from last year. Hello, Alex. This rock and roll thing, eh? Whoa. Yeah, it's been a good year, hasn't it? Yes, so, handing over the trophy to this year's winner with an average score of 9.5, vaulted by all three of us, it is... Crazy by Gnarls Barkley.
Yes! Yeah, it couldn't really have been anything else, could it? Like, number one for the longest time in the year.
I really thought it was going to be either Scissor Sisters or My Chem. I really thought it was going to be one of the two, because that's probably my bias, but I thought it was going to be one of the two with an outside chance that it might be Stargirl. I didn't see Crazy coming at all, to be honest. So, yeah.
I'd make a case for Crazy that it is both a great song and a landmark moment for the charts.
So the trophy gets handed over to Gnarls Barkley. Looking ahead to 2007, I think we're in for a hell of a race, to be honest. I think there's no clear winner, but we'll see. We'll see. But yes, well done to Gnarls Barkley. They win the year of 2006, beating out some incredible competition. I agree with Rob that this has been an absolutely amazing year, especially that top five, just extraordinary, really. So yes, a huge achievement there. Well done.
Are the girls going to get it back next year? Like, it was a clean run, and then we just had the boys breaking up the party. So can the girls get it back next year? That's what we'll
I think
find
they've
out.
Got a chance. Not every girl, but I think there are some girls with a chance next year. We'll see.
I don't know, but my gut says maybe.
Yeah.
Well, thank you all very much for listening. Alongside this Christmas episode, there's that little bonus episode of Moments of Truth, which is the sort of Hits 21 spin-off show I'm borrowing the main feed for. That will be out around the same time as this episode. It's just where I look at hip-hop. And you'll get the whole gist of it when you listen to it for 5 minutes. I don't need to tell you much more. My music's playing you out, as I promised. And we will see you in 2007. 2007. Cannot believe we're already there. We're sort of almost a third of the way up to the present day. Which is... I feel like we're getting there a lot faster than I thought. So we will see you in 2007. Thank you for listening to us in 2006. And we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Bye-bye.